What could your nonprofit or local unit of government do with up to $2,500 in Portage Health Foundation grant funds to improve the health of our community? In 2022, this RFP led to 8 projects being funded, including elder programming at the Keweenaw Bay Indian Community, a therapy dog at the Adams Township Schools, park upgrades in Lorium and Hancock, and an outside classroom renovation at Calumet Art Center. The possibilities are endless. We can't wait to see what your group will do with Portage Health Foundation's $2,500 small grant opportunity. Learn more at phfgive.org.
Welcome once again to Copper Country Today. Good Sunday morning. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them at phfgive.org. And we actually start with a segment this morning that involves the Portage Health Foundation. An announcement was made this week that Portage Health is, and I'm going to let you guys define what this is, but basically absorbing Dial Help. And so I welcome into the studio the Executive Director of Dial Help, Rebecca Crane, and the Executive Director of the Portage Health Foundation, Kevin Storr. I got to say, guys, I was not prepared for that announcement when it came out this week. It really took me by surprise, and I think a lot of other people. When did this whole conversation begin?
I mean, I think that's a fair statement. There's a number of people that I don't want to say shocked, but were maybe a little bit surprised to hear the announcement. I would go back to the question that when did this begin? Rebecca and I started talking a number of years, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Rebecca?
Yep, 4 or 5 years, yep.
Really, and it's been that long.
That we started talking about the services that Dial Help provides. More importantly, the importance and the critical nature of the safety net services that they provide. And the challenge that they face, like a lot of our nonprofit communities, in terms of rising costs, labor costs, labor shortages, reductions in funding, challenges with grant-funded programs, increase in compliance and licensing and all those other things that are necessary to run the services. And that's actually maybe a little bit of a sideline too, Todd, is that, so many of our nonprofits are challenged by, operating. But yet people, when they make contributions or donations to the agency, they want everything to go directly into the program aspect, and they don't recognize all of the administrative overhead and the expertise that's necessary to have quality services.
Yeah.
And, and that's one of the things that we've advocated for as a foundation, advocating for our community partners, is really understanding that in order to have the kind of quality services that are expected, and too often that are under-recognized or under-acknowledged by the broader community, we need to have more effective scaling of that overhead and some of the administrative functions in order for the programming to take place. And Rebecca and I had talked for quite a while about, our partnership, our funding partnership, but we started talking about how could we more effectively scale her resources, her talents, her staff's talents to focus more on programming. And how could we build a system of support that would focus more on the administrative side? And it was in that process, in that journey, we decided that we would go forward and actually do an acquisition of Dial Help into Senior Meal or into the Portage Health Foundation, similar to what we did with Senior Meals. And I bring that up because one of the things this was not an intentional, like, we're going to take over these agencies. It was really looking at a couple key areas of serving our elders and serving our broader community and the cohesion with our mission, and that's what brought about this acquisition.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, but as I've watched your organization over the years, it has always seemed to me that your funding, perhaps more than anybody else's in the area, has been a hodgepodge. You get some money for this part of the program from here. You get a grant to support this part of a program from there. That doesn't lead to a good foundation, I would suspect, year in, year out. It doesn't give you consistency.
And I would say probably there are quite a few people who are in the nonprofit world that can relate to that exact problem, and that is an issue that I think we've had the entire 52 years that we've been around. So I feel like, there's a lot of strategy that's going to go into this merger, but part of it is going to be that they're helping to stabilize some of that so that we can be very deliberate in the type of things that we're going to be offering in addition to what we already offer.
Now, is this a takeover? Is this a merger? Is this an absorption? How do we actually describe this?
this isn't like a 1980s version of Dallas here. I think it's probably more appropriately categorized as an absorption. Yeah. And you're going to see some more changes coming, you know, in the coming months, just as an organization, because it isn't just a change for Dial Help into the foundation or mm-hmm. the meals program into the foundation. You know, we are maturing as an organization that will likely result in some changes to the way that the foundation is presented to the community in order to better represent the region that we serve, and also representing the fact that we are a non-operating funder, as well as a portion of our operation now is an operating foundation, and that changes things. Mm-hmm. So we're going through a fair number of more of the legal restatement of what we are as an organization and how that's going to be presented to the community. So that's the next phase of this, but it is an absorption of Dial Help into that entity.
That was the first thing I thought when I looked at this, and I'm certainly aware of the relationship that you had established with Senior Meals, which was one thing. But this, I looked at it and I thought, this is kind of a seismic shift on the Portage Health Foundation's part. To this point, you have basically been a supporter. Now you become a provider. And with that, does there now come a lot more responsibility for this type of an organization? You've got obligations to people now.
We do. And part of, you know, going into this with some assurances and confidence is because of the confidence we have in with Rebecca and her team and the skill sets that are being brought to the table to help that. You know, we have a solid administrative platform that we can use to scale and effectively support them in their efforts to provide maybe even better provide some of the services mm-hmm. that they have right now. But really, we're looking forward thinking 10 years, 15 years down the road. How do we use this as a platform, the combined resources that we have as the organization, to look at amplifying the services that are needed in the community? And to that point, you know, our charge as a funder is not to just grant monies. Our charge when we converted with the foundation was to use those monies to reinvest in our community, to make our community a more healthful community, to help make our citizens more healthy. And that can be done in a number of different ways. And the Attorney General's office was pretty clear on that, you know, and we were given some latitude on how we were going to do that. And as we've explored all these things, and certainly repeatedly in virtually every community needs health needs survey, and the communities that care survey, and the work that Rebecca and her team have done, what keeps coming back is consistently a need for increased mental health services, the increase for more additional prevention services and community health education programming. So all of these things that are being expressed by the community, we've concluded that this is one way that we can make an investment in not only existing services, but amplifying those services, as well as creating a stronger partner for our other community stakeholders to be involved with. You know, a greater partnership with the Phoenix House and Great Lakes Recovery Center and Little Brothers and, you know, all the Omega House and all these other partners, not only from a practical standpoint of, you know, just collaboration, but also how do we help build capacity there and continue to grant to those organizations as well. You know, we expect that's going to continue. It's not a either or. It's how do we create a platform to better meet the needs across the board.
And that's a question that immediately came to my mind, and I'm not necessarily expecting that this would happen, but there would be people who would say, okay, now does this mean a whole lot of grant money gets diverted to Dial Help and maybe others suffer because you're now having to support this one organization?
No. The short answer is no, because we have been working with Rebecca and her team and providing some financial support through grants and whatnot over the last number of years. We expect that is going to be maybe essentially net neutral. If anything, we might be able to see realize some cost savings just because of centralizing some of the administrative functions, some of the compliance audits, you know, financial accounting, those types of things. We're able, you know, liability insurance. I mean, we're looking right now, I'm projecting close to a $10,000 a year savings on liability insurance. That money can go back into programming.
Sure.
You know, so we anticipate that we'll be able to scale some cost savings with this, but more importantly, to be able to provide the type of support that's going to allow the programming staff to do more of what they're there to do. and that is to serve our community.
I'm reminded, I'm talking with Kevin Storr from the Portage Health Foundation and Rebecca Crane from Dial Help. Their organizations are merging. Dial Help will become a part of the Portage Health Foundation. I'm reminded a little bit of the Copper Country Intermediate School District operating model. Now, obviously, they don't own their member school districts, but over the years, they have developed programs that serve all of those school districts. They handle payroll, they handle IT, they handle a number of other things so that those individual school districts don't have to handle them, and they get some cost savings that way. Is that kind of what's happening here in some respect?
To some extent, absolutely. I mean, we expect that we'll be able to see some centralization of duties, and actually, you know, we're one of the employees at Dial Help is going to be joining and working with accounts payable, receivable, payroll. You know, so and as you can imagine, the complexities of, you know, more staff, more contracts, more licensing, accreditation, it takes more resources, and we're trying to look at this a way of how do we centralize that in some ways and try to mitigate the financial implications of that. Your example with the ISD, part of that also was to help provide services to serve the children and families of students within our community that maybe were outside of the primary scope and purpose of the education systems in a way that was more more efficient. You know, instead of having a teacher in one school serving one or two students or three students, they can be serving a whole classroom at the ISD. So I think you're going to see some things coming out, you know, especially the next 6 months. I expect will be a lot of planning and development that needs to go into play. But I think we were just talking on the way over here, you know, what is this going to look like a year from now, and how dramatically different is the organization going to be? But more importantly, how dramatically different is the scope of services that are going to be made available to this community, and the outreach that's being done should be substantial.
So, Rebecca, what is this going to look like a year from now? And what would you like it to look like a year from now?
Well, right now we have a prevention department that works in the schools. We have our victim services. I know you've interviewed them. That works with mostly sexual assault survivors and our child advocacy center. And with their help, we've started now a mental behavioral health division, which is just getting off the ground. So I guess there's no way for me to specifically answer that, because we have to take a look at all the data. We have to analyze and figure out where are the most needs. Because the one thing that we're not going to do is we're not going to take, you know, like an agency that's already functioning and providing services, we're not going to go in and provide the same services. That doesn't make any sense. So what we're going to do instead is take a look at where are the major gaps in across the board, and from 0 to 80 years old. And it's like, and then we're going to start prioritizing and then kind of start working on those particular things. So I guess maybe in 6 months, if you have us back, we can talk a little bit more about where we're going to be heading.
Are there specific programs that you're seeing at this point that you say, hey, you know, this is something at least we are going to consider?
I don't know. I think we're just at the verge. We're just going to start going through all the data and stuff. So I don't want to speak too prematurely about where we're going to go.
I would add to Rebecca's credit, and, you know, they've hired a clinical services director recently, you know, within the last year.
Define what a clinical services director is.
That's the person who's in charge of developing our mental behavioral health division. So new counselors, any type of service that is more along the mental health side of things.
Okay, sorry for butting in there, but I wanted to clarify what that was.
You know, some family supports, outpatient counseling.
Yep.
You know, we're really looking at, you know, and not just locally. This has been a discussion that's been had in a number of different formats. You know, there's a number of agencies that are working hard to address the variety of mental health concerns, and I'm focusing on the mental behavioral health side right now. And keep in mind that, you know, as our listeners are, you know, contemplating what we're saying, there's so many things that go into that ecosystem of mental behavioral health services and need that exists in our community. So when we talk about substance use and addiction, and we talk about our drug court and the work that, you know, that Judge Davitol and his crew is doing on the drug court, or that the Upset West team is doing in terms of trying to get drugs off the street, you know, they're not functioning independent from one another. You know, they're all intended to be focusing on, you know, addressing those risk factors in our community. So when I bring that back to, like, one of the things that Rebecca had talked to us about before was really looking at how do we complement the counseling services that are offered by Copper Country Community Mental Health, some of our private provider community, our healthcare system. And we all know that there's gaps, and we all know that everybody's struggling, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and we don't necessarily need to get into all that on this show right now. But she had talked about the need to look at how do we provide some outpatient counseling services to fill some of those gaps that are people are just being overlooked. They're mm-hmm. they're not being able to access service. And they hired, you know, somebody here within the past year to start looking at how to model complementary counseling services, family support services. Mm-hmm. How does that mirror in with their victim advocacy and their prevention? And then when we talk about it, what we're seeing right now, Todd, with our senior community, just in providing meals to them, through that assessment process, we are seeing more and more health needs, risk mental health needs within that population because mm-hmm. of all the things that have happened over the last 3-4 years. And, you know, again, we don't need to get in all the effects of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But, you know, anxiety, depression, suicide ideation,
just loneliness.
Exactly.
Isolation.
All of it. So how does that translate to, you know, when our drivers, this year has been a terrible year for slip and falls. We've had so many of our senior community that have had falls this year that are now, you know, how does that tie into healthcare and rehab access? But then, like you said, the loneliness, the segregation, the isolation, how do we pipe them into if there is needed mental health services? Now, instead of trying to look at this interagency, now it's more interdepartmental. As our drivers are seeing these needs, they can, and it's not that wasn't there before, but it's creating efficiencies in that delivery and addressing those needs that we're seeing.
You have more eyes on more people, mm-hmm. and those eyes are able to connect to needed services.
Yeah. Yep. Much easier. And or coming back to the planning room and saying, this is what we're seeing here. How does that translate to community health education? How does the fact that we have seniors that we're trying to produce more nutritious meals, more home cooked meals, and we're putting more, like, you know, freshly made salads and things like that, but their oral health is so bad that they can't eat the food that we're providing to them? And how does that translate? So we're trying to look at all these different areas of social determinants of health and health risk factors, and looking at how do we create that mechanism to fill some of those gaps and complement the other service providers in our community, but at the same time, figure out some plans to meet the needs that our community is continually expressing to us that are there.
And heaven knows we have gaps in the mental health situation. I'm not blaming anybody for it. It's just been because we're isolated, we're not in a position necessarily to draw a lot of high-level professionals here because we don't necessarily have enough business to support them. But on the other hand, we have people who need this kind of help, and it's been a problem for a long time, Rebecca.
Yes, for sure it has been.
And I know that you have made efforts to try to fill that gap. This new behavioral health wing, what is it intended to do?
Well, like you said, we've hired a clinical supervisor and we've hired one therapist, but the whole idea is like to look at the next 5 to 10 years and to kind of determine like what areas are needed, but we want to kind of create more, hire more counselors that are going to be filling the gaps of service need.
At some point, do we need psychiatrists? I mean, the one thing that seems to be missing is the trained mental health professional who can themselves prescribe medication. I'm talking to people who have mental health issues. I've been very open on this show that I suffer from bipolar 2 disorder. There are just not a lot of options here in mm-hmm. town where you can go to your family physician and they can make the prescription, but they're not necessarily experts on mental health, and I'm not sure that I want them doing that role. But where else do you go? Is there the opportunity for us to expand in that regard?
You're pointing at me on that one. Again, the short answer is yes. Yes, it's needed. Yes, the medical community, the primary care provider community needs that support from a psychiatrist that can help with medication management. We've had, and there's some folks right now that are deeply engaged in a discussion about psychiatric assessment, emergent assessment, in-home assessment to some extent. There's Dr. Kelly Mahar in Marquette. She's part of the psychiatric residency program over there, is leading a small task force to address a different model for perhaps a mental health delivery model that integrates psychiatric oversight and med management with the appropriate level of community health supports, licensed counselors, MSWs, you know, people like Rebecca and her team. And I'm not glossing over it, but there will be a time probably in the near future to have a more detailed conversation about some of the modeling. We've had a lot of discussion with our representation down in Lansing on funding models for how we could be supported to at least seed the startup of some of this. Our elected officials have been very receptive to some of the ideas and certainly the need that exists for funding support. And we're starting to see more engaged activity and conversation with our medical community than we have in recent past. So there's an awful lot of neat things that are happening. And I'm going to bring all of that back to why we felt that this was necessary for us to come together more cohesively as an organization to be able to better work through these strategy sessions, to better allocate the resources that we do have that are limited, to centralize some of that administrative function. But that ties right back into how is that relationship with the provider on all scopes, all levels within the delivery model, and how do we structure that? And we're working through that. We don't have it cleared up yet, Todd, but we are working through that.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of details that still need to be worked out. We have talked about your vision for a campus, of whole health community campus here in the area, and that, as we talked about it some months ago, included your hope that maybe there would be the opportunity for location for some of these organizations to work together in the same place. How does this acquisition fit in with that dream?
I would, you know, one of the things that comes to mind right off, top of mind, is the work that they're doing with the Child Advocacy Center, that children that are victims of abuse or sexual abuse or assault, violence, and jump in anytime you'd like on this. But, you know, when I look at it from the work that Rebecca and her team have done and the resources that they have to serve that population in their most vulnerable state, that wellness campus, what we've talked about is having a purpose-built child advocacy center that is a dignified location that offers a type of caring, compassionate, safe place for the children.
And that are built victims, so that they will feel comfortable there, not a room that adults use that has a couple of chairs and a table in it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, we've talked about having a separate, you know, a separate entrance and security system and all that, because unfortunately all those things are critical to that type of a business too.
Sure, and children are our most vulnerable resource. We had a report the other day about a guy in St. Ignace who just got arrested for online activity, that's terrible. It's something that when it happens to our children, we need to be there.
Yeah.
And be ready for them. Now, the existing services that Dial Help is offering, the support services for sexual assault and crime victims, the counseling, the 24-hour suicide and
the
distress
crisis
line, all of that continues?
Yeah, it's all going to continue. Yep.
It all continues. Let's, before we wrap this up, let's refresh people. If they are struggling and need to talk to somebody,
right,
the 24-hour crisis line is available. How do they access it?
Right now, you can access it through 482-HELP. We also have an instant message option. If you go to our website, you can click on that. We also have, there's also a place that you can text us too. So
you can go to the Dial Help website, and that's going to stay the same at this point?
Well, yeah, probably down the road, some things like that will change, but right now it's still the same website. And like you said, all the information, whether calling, texting, or instant messaging, is all on that website.
And if somebody has been the victim of sexual assault and needs some support, maybe needs to contact the police, is thinking about it, is afraid to do it, wants some support, how do they get that support?
Well, so if they call, they contact the police, and if they are agreeable to it, the police typically contact us.
Okay.
Or they contact us directly through our crisis line, and then we have a variety of services, but some of them, you know, like advocacy. So we can, if this person wants to take this issue to court, you know, we'll be there for them. If they just need counseling, if it's something that happened years and years ago. So we pretty much have the whole scope of services for people who've been through that experience.
I'm sure it's never a comfortable experience to mm-hmm. go through that system. It's got to be terrible.
Yeah.
But for those women perhaps who are listening who have been considering this, there is help and support available, and you can contact Dial Help.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how long ago. If it's something that happened 20 years ago and it still is, still you're struggling with it, please give us a call.
All right, we've got to wrap this up. I'm looking forward to hearing more about how this plays out over the next months and years. Kevin Storr from the Portage Health Foundation, Rebecca Crane from Dial Help. Good luck. I hope this works out wonderfully, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.